Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 23rd already of August. Michael Trinkline is our guest this hour. Michael is the author of a really beautiful and highly interesting and entertaining book, Lost States, True Stories of Texlahoma, Transylvania, and Other States That Never Made It. And many of them are right in our area. Michael is the writer and producer of the PBS documentary Pioneers of Television, also The Gold Rush and Oregon Trail. He lives in Cedarburg, and he's going to be speaking at a couple of events tonight at Boswell Books on Downer in Milwaukee, and that's at 7 o'clock, and then tomorrow at Next Chapter Books in Mequon, Wisconsin. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, it is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And of course, this conversation begs the question, why not state number 51? Why stop at 50? So he includes wonderful stories. The real stories of states are often, he says, laugh out loud, funny, replete with absurd characters, stunning ignorance, and monumental screw-ups. He's been collecting these long-forgotten stories for many years and thought that it was time to share them. And so this is his time to share them. Michael, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Good to be here. Good to have you here. Did you do the maps, too? The maps are beautiful.
Yeah, that was the fun part. I really enjoyed making the maps, and sometimes I made them from scratch, or sometimes I would adapt to them from existing maps, because a lot of times the people who would create some new state never really made a good map, so I'd have to make the map, yeah.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Oh, there are a lot of intriguing stories, but let's start, if you don't mind, with Cuba, or Cuba, because as you say, it's a serious proposal that might have saved civilization.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at a map, you have to say, why isn't Cuba in the United States? It's right. You can actually, there are people who can actually swim from Florida to Cuba. It's
and
that
they
close.
Do.
And they do. Yeah. It's that close. And the question is, well, why isn't it a state? And the reason really has to do largely with matters of race in a lot of ways, that at the time in which Cuba might have entered the Union around the turn of the previous century, there were enough people in Congress who thought, you know, they just didn't want people of color entering the Union. I mean, it's kind of a recurring theme. I mean, another similar example is New Mexico. It was originally going to be a state, might have been in the right after the Civil War, but actually it wasn't until 1912 that it became a state, because there was sort of the same debate we're having now about, you know, do we, you know, does, how are people of color going to enter the Union? And there were certain people who just didn't want that, unfortunately. So it's kind of a recurring theme in our history, and kind of a sometimes a very troubling one is in that instance. Now, your question about Cuba. Actually, if Cuba had entered the Union back in 1900 or so, and which was very seriously discussed in Congress and in the media, all the smart people thought, many thought Cuba should become a state. The reason it didn't, as I just mentioned, but had it become a state, well, we wouldn't have had the Cuban Missile Crisis and might have saved the entire world, yeah.
Right. I think you better, just considering the fact that a lot of people don't know what's going on or have lost their historical memories, why don't you describe what that crisis was for younger members of our audience who maybe missed that chapter in American history? It was a huge crisis in this country.
Yeah, there was the time period for a week or two in the early 1960s when we thought we might go to nuclear war. We were very close. I mean, Cuba parked a bunch of missiles, right? The Soviet Union parked missiles in Cuba pointing at the U.S. in a way that we could not retaliate. And so essentially, the Soviet Union for a period of time could have blown us off the map. There were a lot of scared people. People built fallout shelters. I mean, people were very afraid. And there was a lot of concern for a period of time. That chapter happened because Cuba is so close to us, and in essence, a foreign power could theoretically launch an attack on us from a close area. And in fact, there have been many attempts over the years, a lot of these lost states proposals, where people right after World War II who were worried about this happening, worried about it in advance, really, of it happening. There was a movement to make Iceland a state for strategic reasons, Newfoundland, some of the outerlying, like the Bahamas and those islands. At different times, they've been proposed, and often it's for security reasons that, you know, you want. Even the Yucatan was you know, same reason there. It sticks out into the Gulf, kind of like Florida. And you know, if America owns it, somebody else can't attack us from there.
And what was it, Guyana, the one that NASA would have liked to have Guyana be a state, or Guyana?
Yeah, there's a movement there right now to make Guyana a state. They're kind of in the northern part of South America, and you know, they have a lot in common with us. They're very educated people. They speak English. The reason NASA liked it is because the way the Earth turns, if you launch a rocket from near the equator, you get kind of a jump head start. It's kind of like a little extra boost that you get automatically. So it's better. That's why we have our rockets in Florida, not in, you know, Sheboygan, because you get that extra kind of a bump being near the equator. So that's one reason NASA would love for Guyana to be a state. You know?
And there's actually a movement, a serious movement?
Well, you said the key word.
Serious.
Because many of these movements are serious for a certain small group of people, but they don't really become serious for the larger group until they gain a certain amount of steam. And a lot of these proposals were crazy but actually happened, and others you know, were crazy but didn't happen because they didn't get enough momentum.
Let's look at, as long as we're here, the Upper Peninsula, Superior. This is in Michigan. Talk about Michigan, because it's an interesting story. There's a lot of these little stories where people feel like they're not getting enough, and so they're given a little bit extra. In this case, Michigan's given a little bit of the Upper Peninsula.
Well, what Michigan really wanted was Toledo. Michigan wanted...
Of course. Who wouldn't want Toledo?
they were desperate for Toledo. And the federal government, as they were drawing lines, said, no, you can't have Toledo. And so we'll give you this consolation prize, the government said. We'll give you the Upper Peninsula. And Michigan said, we don't want it. Okay? Sorry, Upers. They didn't want you. And so, and curiously, Wisconsin did want the Upper Peninsula. But Wisconsin wasn't given it. Michigan was given it as this consolation prize. So anytime you have poorly drawn borders, as in that one, you have recurring themes to create new states or rejigger the lines in some way. And so there's this recurring theme to turn the Upper Peninsula into its own state. And this is kind of what got me started on this. In the mid-70s, I remember Newsweek magazine read an article about this movement to make the Upper Peninsula and northern Wisconsin together a new state called Superior. And I thought, you can do that? You know, it just, I didn't realize that, you know, our 50 states were not handed down by Moses. They're something we created. And all maps are sort of human beings' attempt to kind of make sense of the earth that we live on and divide it up. And sometimes those lines are not drawn very well. And in fact, the Upper Peninsula should be a part of Wisconsin, really, or at least
right.
It may be a separate state. And in fact, if it was a separate state, but think about it. The southern, you know, our part of the world, Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin, where we're sitting right now, has a lot of industry. It has a lot of corn. It has a lot of cows. Northern Wisconsin is similar to the UP, and it has a lot of trees. It has a lot of mining. It's different. And it makes sense to draw a line there. And in fact, Thomas Jefferson, who had never visited this area, actually originally laid out the states of the Northwest. Now we'd call it the Midwest. And he laid out a line right where probably the line should have been, kind of around Stevens Point there. And unfortunately, Jefferson's lines didn't make it, but he had some good ideas.
And is it true that I haven't been there? I should go sometime. But you have to take... For a long time, you really couldn't get easily from the Upper Peninsula to Michigan. You have to take a bridge, or how do you get there?
Well, there was no bridge until the 1950s. Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, you had to take a ferry, and that wasn't very easy. So yeah, I mean, it's very, very different. I have a lot of family in Michigan, and you know, they never went to Upper Peninsula. They were just completely separate areas. But hey, Wisconsinites, we go there all the time. So
right.
Maybe we should just take it back. Let's start a movement.
Yeah, exactly. How many areas, and I guess there are many here, I'm thinking about Chicago and other places in the book, people who feel that they needed to have, it was a very small area, but they needed because they felt they had been neglected or because of politics with other parts of their state that they wanted to be unto themselves. I guess you could start with Chicago.
Well, it's a recurring theme throughout the book that people in areas often feel left out by the rest of their state. They pay their tax dollars, but they don't get back what they think they should get. And in fact, even this year, Long Island, once again, wants to separate itself and make itself its own state.
This year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but it comes up every 2 or 3 years because Long Island does give more taxes to the state than they get back, and so they want to make their own state. And there's always legislators in Long Island who are proposing making Long Island a separate state. And Chicago is an interesting story. Back in the in the late 1800s, Chicago was tiny, and that all of a sudden in the early 20th century, Chicago boomed, and it got millions of people all of a sudden. But redistricting wasn't happening. The farmers downstate weren't allowing the redistricting to happen. They were blocking it, and so all the voting power was held outstate, downstate, what they call it in Illinois. And Chicago didn't have their proper representation, and so they said, "Well, if you're not going to give it to us, we're just going to take it and make ourselves our own state." And the beautiful thing about our country, one of the many beautiful things about our country, is that we don't have to fight a war about this. What we can do is our Constitution provides for this. In Article 3, Section 4, or Article 4, Section 3, I always get that confused. But anyway, our Constitution says that if a state legislature okays any proposal and then Congress okays it, you are a state. And if we want to make Milwaukee County a state, if the legislature signs off and Congress does, we can become our own state. And that's what Chicago was trying to do. It's a very legal procedure. Many have tried it. Very few have succeeded. But that process is there, so we don't have to fight a war.
So having done all this work, are you tempted to create a state somewhere out of Wisconsin, Michael? Or
yes,
this movement or not?
my own backyard, my
Your own
state.
Backyard.
Low tax state, I've decided. Very, very low taxes there, yes.
And let's talk, I can't remember the story, but it would have had profound consequences perhaps for the Civil War. The redistricting or the part of Illinois that was not going to be part of Illinois, isn't that in the book somewhere? What's that story?
It's really interesting. I mean, our states are sometimes odd combinations, and often that was on purpose. And Illinois is a good example. If you go to southern Illinois, it's very southern. Northern mm-hmm. Illinois is not. And that was on purpose because the goal was by northerners to link southern Illinois to a northern port. To Chicago. So there'd be this sort of economic connection so that Southerners wouldn't feel attached to the South, Southern Illinois people wouldn't feel attached to the South and thus try to become a part of the South when our nation was splitting up. So it was a very deliberate effort. The other thing that's really interesting about the North and South is that we learn in our history books, the North were against slavery and the South were for slavery. It wasn't that simple. In fact, there was a movement in the South called Nickajack, and this was an attempt to create a state that was not part of the Confederacy, a state that would have been aligned with the North. And this kind of flows kind of along the Appalachians because a lot of people in the South, there were the plantation owners, but there were a lot of other people, farmers, dirt farmers, who didn't have any slaves and really weren't interested in fighting what they saw as a rich man's war. And so they were trying to secede from the secession, if you can follow that, yeah.
Huh. I'm reading To Kill a Mockingbird now for a book club, and there was a part of it takes place in Macomb County, but there was another county that had seceded because they didn't want any part of the Confederacy, which I thought was interesting. Was there much of that was taking place, people who seceded?
Winston County is the excellent example I think you're probably talking
Thank
about.
Thank you.
And what Winston County was sort of like, it reminds me of like Berkeley in the 1960s. I mean, they were protesting, they were fighting. They would the Confederacy would come to convince the young men to join, and they would run off and hide. And they would protest, and it was really interesting. It's just very much a parallel to kind of what Madison or Berkeley might have been like in the 1960s. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Our phone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-486-8655. Our guest is the author of Lost States, and it's a wonderful book. And obviously, from our conversation, you can tell it looks at history as well and some stories about people who wanted to form different kinds of states or have different names for states, and it's quite fascinating. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. Michael Trinkline is our guest, historian, writer, producer, and author, and we start our phone calls with Ken from Milton. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I would like to begin the conversation by reminding your guest that, and to expand it a little bit, that the Mexican War involved the surrendering to my unit of the entire country of Mexico, and we just took the part that we could practically use because it would have turned our country into a Catholic country and such other things. So we drew the line where it did, but the country surrendered to my commander. I mean, the entire country surrendered, Mexico surrendered, as it exists today.
You know, Mexico is really an interesting case because, while I can't speak specifically to what you're talking about, what's really interesting is how we tried to buy Mexico. You know, we all learned in grade school about the Gadsden Purchase, this attempt to buy a little strip of land kind of in the southern part of New Mexico and Arizona. What we don't learn is how James Gadsden was sent down there basically to buy most of Mexico. He went down there to write a check, and they said, you know, we're not selling. And so he bought this tiny sliver, and he thought he had succeeded because you could put a railroad in there. Well, what happened then was the president wasn't happy. He said, no, we want more. We want you to buy more. And so he sent another guy down named John Forsyth, and his job was to buy, you know, basically the whole country. And again, Mexico, not the whole country, but a large portion of it. And again, Mexico said, you know, we're not selling. You can't have our country. And so we threatened war, and there was a lot of saber rattling. And, you know, it's an interesting story about how we have tried different methods of, you know, if you think about it, it seems bizarre, but we bought, you know, from Napoleon, we bought all the Missouri, you know, the Louisiana Purchase, sorry. And same thing with Alaska. We bought that. So we wrote checks a lot. So why not write one more check?
And then you think, too, your mind thinks, what if we had bought Mexico?
Yeah,
our
situation might be a little bit different than it is right now. If you look at life on one side of the border versus the other side of the border, it's very, very different, yeah.
He mentioned Catholicism. Why don't you talk about, you say there's no denying that some state boundaries represent religious demarcations as much as anything else. Minnesota, Lando Lutherans, California, state religion, the cult of the skin. What about the Presbyterians?
Well, yeah, there was we forget how much of an anti-Catholic sort of trouble there was back in earlier times in America. We were sort of consider ourselves a Protestant nation in many ways. And so one of the attempts was to create a state called Hazard by a guy named Sam Hazard. He set up this huge state, and he actually – would have actually happened, actually. The only problem was Sam Hazard – he had the king and queen, or actually the crown, was in favor of his idea. The problem was he died and before he could execute his plan. But we would have actually been part of a state called Hazard. And the idea of Hazard was to create a state that was, you know, didn't have any Catholics. And that was the idea. You know, keep the – no. It's, in fact, I read his one of his documents said we would have no popish chapels, which is sort of – yeah, so I mean, and another really good example or a more current one is the state of Utah. I mean, originally Utah would have been about three times as big as it is now. That's what Brigham Young wanted. And there's reason to make that state bigger. They wanted to call it Deseret. But the federal government felt threatened by the Mormons out in Utah and constantly scaled back the size of that state to ultimately the size that it is today. But arguably, it could be a lot bigger.
And who came up with Utah?
Utah was, I don't know who, but I know it was not the residents' choice. They all wanted Deseret, and the federal government, Utah is the name of the Indian tribe. They're the Utes, and so it's named after them. But the locals, it was imposed on them. It was kind of punishment, really.
Punishment? Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's welcome more phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Jeffrey Rosen will be joining us, law professor at George Washington University and legal affairs editor at the New Republic. He's written a fascinating article about Justice Louis Brandeis, so that's coming up tomorrow. This hour of the program, we're talking about the lost states, true stories of Texlahoma. We have yet to get to that. Transylvania and other states that never made it. Our guest, Michael Trinkline, is going to be speaking tonight at Boswell Books for those of you in the Milwaukee area. This is Don Downer in Milwaukee at 7 o'clock and tomorrow at Next Chapter Books in Mequon, Wisconsin. Just think, it could have been Hazard Public Radio, not Wisconsin Public Radio. Hazard Public Radio. Well, that would have been a terrible name for a state, wouldn't it?
Well, Jefferson wanted to call our area Michigania. So that would have Michigania Public Radio. We already got, there's already one of those, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Jordan in Madison is next. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I've been in Wisconsin for the last couple months, but I grew up in Michigan. And so when you guys are talking about, you know, the UP and whether that should be part of Wisconsin, or that kind of hit a nerve with me. You know, we're very proud of the UP in the Lower Peninsula. Maybe we don't make it up there as much. And I had a comment about there not being a bridge until the 1950s. The Mackinac Bridge is a beautiful, beautiful piece of architecture. The engineering on it is fantastic. It is, in my opinion, you know, it's right up there with the Golden Gate Bridge out in San Francisco, just in terms of the engineering marvel of it. And I think, you know, if for any other reason we have that bridge now, and that's worth having two peninsulas in Michigan. And I have one more question: in Michigan, we call ourselves the Mitten, and I hear some people in Wisconsin say that Wisconsin looks like a mitten, more so than Michigan does, and I just don't understand that at all. I wonder if you guys have any comments on that.
Okay, thank you so much, Jordan.
Well, I can't weigh in on the mitten controversy, but I can talk. And I don't mean to say that people in Michigan today don't want or aren't interested in the Upper Peninsula. It was just that back at the period of time when the statehood was being formed, at that time, Michiganers didn't seem too excited about the Upper Peninsula, but I'm sure that's changed. One thing that's really true about Michigan, though, is that it's huge distance from one end to the other. I mean, if you live in Iron Mountain, for example, it's easier to go shopping in South Dakota than it is in Detroit because it's that far away. So it's a long drive across that state.
Yeah. Let's talk about Albania for a moment. I found that one humorous. Albania, they love America like a stalker.
Well, when George Bush went over, they, you know, nobody protested when everyone else was protesting George Bush. And what they did is they said, we want to become the 51st state. Please occupy us. That was the signs they held up. Please occupy us. And in fact, they have a long history. They named their babies George after the president. And it's not a Republican thing. When Bill Clinton was president, they named their babies Bill and Hillary. There's a lot of little Hillarys and Bills running around Albania. And this goes back many years. They have a strong pro-American philosophy. And, who can understand how that is? I mean, I like America too, so I guess I can't blame them too much. But they're a little too far away to actually become a state, I think.
Yeah, that would be hard. That would be hard. Thanks, Jordan. Paul is next from Duluth. Hi, Paul.
Well, the last caller talking about Michigan stole most of my thunder. But I grew up in Detroit in the 50s, and my family, my mother's side of the family, is from the UP, and I remember taking the ferry across, and it really did seem like an alien place at the time, but it isn't anymore. So I'm not going to even, because the last caller really nailed it real well. What I want to, you mentioned ideas of secession, and my snarky attitude is that if the Governor Perry of Texas has brought up the idea of secession, I would only ask him, I would say, go ahead and do it as long as you promise to take Oklahoma with you. And that's really, I'm listening, so I'll just get off the air.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, the governor of Texas did at one point propose recently seceding, not just to form a new state, but actually to leave the union entirely. But what's interesting about Texas is that when they were a separate country who sort of joined the United States. And so when they joined, they got a little deal. And the deal says anytime Texas wants, it can split itself up into five states. Now, the reason to do that is they would then have, instead of two senators, they'd have 10 senators and have a lot more power. And this was proposed over and over again. In fact, fact, in the early days of Texas statehood, everyone in Texas kind of assumed this would happen. Well, it hasn't happened. And occasionally when Texas feels frustrated because New England, which is smaller than Texas, has all these senators, and Texas only has two, they propose this idea of splitting up. The problem is nobody wants to hail from East Texas or North Texas. Everybody wants to be from just Texas. And so that idea hasn't actually happened yet.
What was this idea of a German state, a new fatherland in Texas?
You know, it's interesting. There's this recurring theme of early American history of peoples coming here, mostly from Europe, wanting to really recreate a perfected version of their home country. And things were going bad in Germany, and so there was this movement to move literally a large portion of the entire nation to this place in Texas. And they called their little sort of nation state Adelsverein. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. My German father will kill me if I'm not. But that is the name of the state in Texas that they tried to build. Well, they were very efficient, as Germans are. I know I'm German, but unfortunately they, you know, in America we're not real big on building states that are sort of ethnic enclaves, and eventually they assimilated. But one thing they did do was they made peace with the Native American tribes in that region, which no one else was able to do. So somehow they cut a good deal, and they actually made peace with Native Americans, but their state never did happen.
Thanks, Paul, for your call. Hugh from Milwaukee, hello.
Hi. Earlier you were talking about a proposed state in the English colonies that would not allow Roman Catholic churches. You should remember that at the time, the Louisiana Territory, which was French and Spanish, depending on the year, would not allow a Protestant church. Spain controlled Florida, and Protestants were not allowed there. Mexico was Catholic and would not allow Protestants there. In fact, I cannot think of any Catholic country anywhere in the world at that time that would permit Protestants.
Yeah, I'm glad that we now live in a nation where we have freedom to set up kind of whatever church that we like to. I mean, that was not always the case on the land that's now America, and so I'm glad that we're in a different world now where we can practice what we believe.
People had a lot of ideas of what to do with the Midwest. We've already talked about Hazard. What about Charlatina? Is that how it would have been pronounced?
Yeah, I mean, yes, to the best of our knowledge, because it didn't last very long. And what happened there was the French and Indian War we all learned about in school. And when the British won that war, they figured, well, we have to get people here in order to own the territory. If you don't have people there, you're not going to be able to keep it. The same reason we sent lots of people went to Oregon. Not so much for land, but because they knew that if there were Americans there, it would become American territory. And Charlatina was an attempt to get British people to come here. And in fact, no one wanted to come. This is really early on. And so what they did was they said, well, let's send all the prisoners over. That didn't happen either. And the whole idea kind of dissolved. But it's sort of emblematic of this understanding that you're not going to really hold any territory unless you have people there of whatever your country is.
Huh. But they did send prisoners to Australia, right?
They did, and that worked out well there, but didn't work out in would have been basically Duluth and that sort of area around there.
Huh. Let's talk about the Dakotas. There are a lot of stories about the Dakotas, North, South, Mount Rushmore, you know, all of that. Why have there been so many different attempts to carve that area up and all these different names for what's now North Dakota and South Dakota and maybe some other states as well?
Well, one of the things I think is kind of cool about the whole book is that we all look at our map and go, well, that's just the way it had to be. And in reality, for most of our history, we were fighting about it, arguing about it, trying to figure out where to draw that line. And this was sort of a central part of the national debate. And we've kind of lost that last 50 years or so, but it really was. And in Dakota, the idea was, should it be one state? Should it be two states? And if it's two, how do we split it? For a long time, the idea was split it east-west, so there'd be East Dakota and West Dakota. And let's do it north-south. It's not quite big enough to be a state, but it's too big to be one state. I mean, these are the kind of questions we wrestled with. And so as we were kind of drawing the line westward, there was this anticipation of where we're going to put these lines to make sense. And sometimes it succeeded, and sometimes it was an utter failure. I mean, I lived in Idaho for 20 years. Idaho makes no sense whatsoever. You know, there's only one squiggly road that goes from northern Idaho to southern Idaho. They have nothing in common. They don't even have an Idaho State Fair. Do you know that? They have a North Idaho State Fair and a South Idaho. They don't even communicate. So it's just – it's really amazing how – and there's a movement to create a different state there because of it. And that's the problem. When you have poorly drawn lines, you have these recurring movements to kind of redraw the line or make a new state. And oftentimes, they're not – they're sort of – you know, they're not likely, but there's still this attempt to make it better.
I don't know anybody who's lived in Idaho for 20 years. What were you doing there?
I was a college professor there. I taught
really?
At the university, yeah. I grew up in Wisconsin in Cedarburg, and then I got this job in Idaho. I thought, well, America's homogenous. It'll be just like Wisconsin. I couldn't find a brat, you know. Painfully, I couldn't get the Packer games. It was really a difficult time, but I survived it and brought my Idaho wife back to Wisconsin, and she's just...
There you go. You found your wife in Idaho.
But she's so flummoxed because there's no mountains here. She can't find her way.
So there's a reason for Idaho. What did you teach?
I taught film and television at the university there, yeah.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was beautiful, though, huh?
It is beautiful. We were near Yellowstone. It's a beautiful country, and... You know, it's kind of funny. We were one time, my wife and I were sitting watching The Tonight Show, and Jay Leno did a joke about Idaho, and he said, you know, it's something, something in the Midwest. And my wife just jumped out of her chair. Idaho is not the Midwest. Idaho is the West. And, you know, we're very territorial about our states and regions.
It's like those Easterners getting the time wrong, which happens to us every now and then. There are other time zones in America, please.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Well, when you live in the mountain time zone and they say, you know, 8, 7 central, you're like, well, what about us?
I know. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh.
The poor mountain time
zone.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, we'll remember that. Our number is 800-486-8655. Mary is next from Belleville. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I'd like to recommend a little book by Scott Sanders called Wilderness Plots. And one of the little vignettes in it is called The Wandering of Lake Erie. And a man named Amos Spafford complained to the governor of Ohio that although he was standing on the shore, every map that was published moved the lake so many miles in another one direction or another. Finally, to his disgust, they assigned his farm to Michigan instead of Ohio. So the governor... declared a war, the governor of Ohio against Michigan, called up the militia, and then the band of Michigan settlers swooped down, mostly fought with bean poles and pitchforks. At any rate, it's a wonderful, clever and witty and accurate little book. Fun to read.
Thank you.
Well, we all know about the big war between the states, but there were other wars between the states, and your caller is correct in describing kind of a war between Ohio and Michigan. And there was another one, a much bigger one, between Connecticut and Pennsylvania. Connecticut claimed land all the way to the Pacific, and they said, that's ours. And, of course, much of that was through what Pennsylvania considered their land. And so there was actually one of the entries in the book is about a state called Wyoming, which actually was in what we now call Pennsylvania. Connecticut said it was, you know, their right to set up a state there, and Pennsylvania said, no, you're not. And there was a war. There people died. There were fights, shooting guns. I mean, it was the federal government had to step in. So, you know, borders can get people pretty worked up sometimes.
Yeah, they sure can. What about Canada, parts of Canada? Shouldn't they have been part of the United States?
Well, there are so many interesting stories. I mean, Newfoundland, what we all think that's part of Canada, always has been. Well, it was in the 1940s, it was still independent of Canada. And if you took a poll of actually, they prefer to call themselves Newfoundlanders, they would say, let's join the U.S. Forget about Canada. Unfortunately, the Canadian government really wanted it and sort of I don't want to say it rigged the election, but it wasn't too far from that. I mean, in essence, you know, we could have had Newfoundland if we'd have wanted it, and America didn't want it. Canada did, and so they made it happen. More recently, in the mid-1990s, of course, there was this movement in Quebec to separate itself from the rest of the nation. And if that had happened, and it came within a few thousand votes, I mean, the entire nation voted within a few thousand votes, or I'm sorry, the Quebecers voted. If that had happened, then you have Canada split into pieces, and it's very likely, a lot of people were suggesting, smart people, that many of Canada's provinces would have tried to join the U.S., would have petitioned for statehood. I mean, think about Alberta with all the oil. Would we have said no to that? I don't know.
Right,
you know?
Right.
How that works out is, I don't know the answer, but it's possible, and it could happen again. I mean, when you have a country that speaks two different languages and has, you know, disparate sorts of lifestyles like Canada does, it's hard to know if someday that might come back.
Hmm. And yet when you watch the Olympics or you go to Canada, you feel that Canadians are particularly proud of being Canadians, aren't they?
Well, they very much are for the most part. But you have to realize Canada isn't that old of a country. I mean, it was, you know, it's you know, 100 years as Canada. I mean, it was called Canada before that, but it was many pieces that came together not that long, you know, only a few generations ago. So these pieces, you know, might come apart. Hmm. I mean, I'm not a Canadian, so I can't speak to it, but it's not like, you know, Canada has been Canada for 5,000 years.
Right. And what's the story with Quebec now? Are they still, is there going to be another vote coming up on whether or not they should be a separate state?
I don't know. I do know that in a lot of these situations, there's kind of always this equilibrium that sometimes boils up one way or the other. The same thing in Puerto Rico, where, you know, do we want to, you know, have a state or be an independent nation, or do we want to stay as we are? And it kind of goes up and down. It's 50%, it's 45%. It kind of depends on the news of the day if something, you know, comes up that spurs it one way or the other.
Scott in La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Scott.
A couple weeks ago, when you were on vacation, you must remember, John Lipson was filling in for you. And
John,
he had a guest on there, a history professor from someplace in New Jersey. Anyhow, she has a book or has a thesis or something about how the late 1800s, and I think the president was Benjamin Harrison, and she said it's really her thesis was about the Indian Wars and Little Bighorn and what a disaster that turned out to be. But her thesis basically is that that era was just about as polarized as we are now, where each of the political parties thought the other was actually evil. In other words, the Republicans who had the White House and had with Harrison as president, really felt that if the Democrats got control of the Congress, they would take the country down the toilet, and therefore Harrison was hell bent, so to speak, on getting more states carved up, kind of like what you're talking about with Texas, out of that area, that territory, the Dakota territories, and that in fact was one of the main factors, she said, in formulating those two states. And I was wondering if your guest had any information or more elucidation about that.
Yeah, I can validate that story that for a long time North and South Dakota couldn't enter the Union because the political party that was in power didn't want them to be in the Union. And then when the new president came in, he quickly signed it over as his first act. You know, creating all of the states really in every case was a political decision. I mean, and this hatred you're talking about really was true in the period just before the Civil War, where we were very concerned about adding a slave state or not a slave state. I mean, and states had to enter in pairs because each party would only vote for one side. So Maine and Missouri came in at the same time. And you really see an echo of that when Alaska and Hawaii enter in 1959, that, you know, one, it's so funny, Alaska was thought to be the liberal Democratic state, and Hawaii was supposed to be the Republican state. Well, they switched. But nonetheless, that was the idea that you're only, and in fact, I think going forward, we're only going to see states added in pairs for sort of the polarization of politics that your caller's talking about.
Going forward, you mean you think we're going to have new states soon?
Well, I mean, I don't know about soon, but I think if you look at atlases, historical atlases like I do, you see the map is always changing.
Right.
I mean, and even the American map has always been changing. I mean, I like to say that Barack Obama is the first president not to have seen a new state added in his lifetime. And that says to me that we've been constantly changing and adding. And I think for us to say, well, now we're done, you know, we know this is the best America, it'll never change. Boy, I don't know. I think that's a little bit of hubris to think that we know what's going to happen in the future.
Mm. Thanks, Scott. We'll welcome more phone calls. Actually, we have an email on Franklin, which we will, I know it's in your book, so we will talk about Franklin in a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to do so. Our guest is the author of Lost States, True Story. We haven't even talked about Texlahoma, Transylvania, and other states that never made it. Michael Trinkline is our guest. He's a historian, writer, producer. Tonight he will be at Boswell Books on Downer in Milwaukee at 7, and tomorrow at Next Chapter Books in Mequon. Did I give you the number? The lines are open, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Hazard Public Radio. No, no, Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the massive egg recall at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then Jeffrey Rosen, who has a great article about Justice Louis Brandeis in the current issue of The Atlantic, The New Republic, sorry, will be joining us tomorrow at 10. Well, we have an email from Tom in Stevens Point. Can you comment on the state of Franklin, which actually existed for a couple of years but was dissolved without ever being admitted to the Union?
Yes. Franklin actually had the Continental Congress's vote, but not the three-fourths vote I think needed at that time to make it a state. It would have been in what is now eastern Tennessee, and they tried to set up their own little state. They figured it would have more legitimacy if they named it after Ben Franklin.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask that.
Well, he was still alive, and he's like, don't do that. I don't want you naming your state after me. He was actually against the idea. And it's kind of interesting. We actually have kind of an informal policy in our country not to name states after people, with one exception, of course, and that's Washington. It's the only one.
Huh. And you wanted to tell the story about another Wisconsin story about Rough and Ready?
Well, yeah, this is an interesting story, and it's such a great Wisconsin story. I mean, basically in 1849 and 1848, all the ambitious young men, and it was almost all men, in America went to California to get money. You would go to California, you thought, to get money in the gold rush. You'd pick up gold, you'd come back home. Well, and they went together, and a bunch of Wisconsin boys went to this one particular part of California, and they were having a good old time. I mean, imagine a bunch of 20-year-olds, you know, no authorities around. It's like Animal House, basically. And they were having a wild party out there in California. And then California cracked down and said, well, we're going to pass their particular county, pass a law saying no alcohol. Now, you can't say this to a bunch of Wisconsin boys in their 20s. So they said, all right, fine, we're going to secede from California and make our own state, nation, or whatever we're going to call it, and we'll call it Rough and Ready. And they existed for several months until finally they had a problem. The 4th of July was coming up, and they were planning a big party, of course, and they realized they couldn't have a American Independence Party because they weren't part of America anymore. At least that was their idea. And so they said, all right, well, we'll rejoin America. Well, you know, I mean, it was all, I don't know how serious the whole thing was, but I mean, to this day, there is still a Rough and Ready celebration every 4th of July where they celebrate their independence, but it was actually in California, but it was actually a bunch of Wisconsin
boys. Oh, that's
a
great story. Great story. Let's go to Dane is next in Superior. Hi, Dane.
Hi. I was wondering, if you look at old Matt, the Wisconsin territory went down to the tip of Lake Michigan, the southern boundary. But then when Illinois became a state, Illinois got like a piece of a little strip of land that maybe goes 50 miles north. So was that just to get Chicago as a port, or was it something else involved there?
Yeah, you've hit on a caller. That is exactly what happened. We could have had Chicago. I'm not sure if that would be good or bad, but we'd certainly be a much more populous state. The reason that wasn't done is exactly as you're saying, in that we wanted to give a port. Ports were very important back then to the new state of Illinois and also to Indiana. So Indiana has a port, Gary, Illinois has Chicago. And so the idea there was to adjust the line so that every Midwestern state would have at least some lake access.
Hmm. Thanks very much for the call. We need to get to, because it's part of the title of the book, Texlahoma.
Texlahoma, yes. Well, the idea was that these panhandles often feel left out. And Oklahoma has a panhandle, and Texas has, they call it a panhandle too, in their northern part, and they felt left out. Everybody was buying a Model T back in the 20s and teens, and they didn't have any good roads. So they went to their state legislature and said, build us some good roads. And the state said, forget about it. And I'm shortening the story, essentially. But that's what happened. And so they said, all right, fine, we'll make our own state. And they attempted to do so. Because if you look at that part of Texas and Oklahoma, it's very different from the rest of Texas and Oklahoma. And they tried to create a state called Texlahoma. As you might guess, it didn't actually happen. But Texans, I have a 500-page book just on Texas alone trying to split up all the different iterations. I mean, it's amazing how much they've proposed it, but never quite happens.
Huh. Let's go to Jason. Jason from Appleton. Hi, Jason.
Hey, guys. I had a friend that hiked the Pacific Crest Trail from through California and through the Northwest last year. And he went, when he was going through northern California, southern Oregon, he came across this area known as Jefferson and how they're petitioning to become their own state. And I just looked it up online. Like, they totally have a website, Jefferson State. They want to become the 51st state. And I'm wondering if your guest knows anything about this.
Yeah, the public radio station there is called Jefferson Public Radio.
Is it really?
It is. Yeah, they're still holding out. And this is one of those things it's really a good story because it started out as kind of a joke that they would make Northern California and Southern Oregon into what would have then been the 49th state. But then it actually gained steam. It actually makes a lot of sense. California needs to be split up. This area is culturally and geographically distinct. And they actually started to get some movement. And it actually might have been the 49th state, except for one thing. The day they started to sort of begin their movement and roll out their whole plan was December 4th or 5th of 1941. Well, you know, Pearl Harbor happened a couple days later, and everybody forgot all about the Jefferson proposal. So if they had a better timing, they might have actually had a state.
Hmm. Thanks for the call. Donna is next from Arcadia. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a suggestion and
a
prediction for territory added to the United States. I think that the U.S. and Mexico should unite in some sort of fashion. It would solve a lot of our problems. The immigration problem would go away overnight. They have a young population. We have an old population. It'd be great. And if it works out as well as I think it could, we could let Canada in, too.
Well, we chuckle, but I mean, for much of American history, this idea was discussed very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, should we expand? Should we absorb Canada? Should we absorb Mexico? And this was not a laughing matter for a long part of our history. And there were many serious attempts to at least add portions of Mexico, as I mentioned earlier, and portions of Canada. And whether it happens now, the problem is that, you know, where we are in the world now, America is seen as being too imperial, and we don't want to, if we expand, we'll be seen as a bigger bully. That's how some people might see us. So I don't see us absorbing any other nations, but I think in time the map will change. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donna, very much for the call. Other stories we haven't had a chance to get to. Maine, two very different, North Maine, South Maine.
Yeah, Maine's a really interesting story. In fact, just a couple of months ago, there was another attempt to split Maine in half. The Maine legislators in the north. The north of Maine is kind of like the north of Wisconsin, and you know they chop stuff down, and they have a lot of fishing and recreation. The south of Maine, they have Shakespeare festivals. You know, it's a very different kind of a place, and there's a constant attempt to split Maine in half. It comes back every few years. It's not going to happen. Northern Maine doesn't have enough people, but there was a successful. Maine is an interesting example because for a long time Maine was a part of Massachusetts, and it was the one really clear example in our history where a state actually split by this constitutional process I talked about, where Maine kept saying, let us be our own state, and Massachusetts kept saying, no. Finally, Massachusetts gave up and said, fine, you can become your own state, and they voted on it. Congress voted on it, and Maine became a separate state through this constitutional process. Yeah.
Hmm. Let's go to Richard next in Lake Tomahawk. Hi, Richard.
Well, hi, Kathleen, and Mike, hello to you. Mike was one of my former English students at Cedarburg High, and I'm very proud of him, and I want him to know that. And tomorrow night he'll be at a bookstore in Mequon,
yes,
owned by one of my former students as well.
Oh, my goodness.
The question I have is, there are a lot of Cassvilles and Cass Lakes and Cassopolises around Michigan and Minnesota and Wisconsin. And I'm wondering, Mike, as Doc Cass, is this related in any way to a first governor here or something of that nature? I've never been able to determine that.
I don't know. I can't say I'm a historian on Wisconsin history or on place names so much. The book tends to focus more on crazy state proposals throughout the entire United States. So I'm sorry I don't know the answer to that one. I wish I did because my family grew up on a Cass River in Michigan.
Oh, really?
Maybe there's a relation there, yeah.
Huh. I'll bet you'll know it by tomorrow night when you're at Mequon. You'll have the answer by then in case you're going to be there, Richard. Thank you very much for your call. And let's go to Ron from Blooming Grove. Hi, Ron.
NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, happened back in 1993. Papa George Bush couldn't get it through in 92, so the powers that be somehow got Bill Clinton elected president, and he brought enough Democrat Congress members, House and Senate, along to get a majority, and the 50 states of the United States of America and the 20 states of the United States of Mexico, which is their official name, and I think there are officially 12 provinces, maybe 13, plus territories in Canada. So if each of those 82 states has two of its own senators, they would actually merge the political existence of the three countries into one. Right now, it's an economic integration that has happened back in 1993. And, of course, lots of racist people do not want Mexico officially to be in the same nation state as the USA. And that's probably why it happened as a trade agreement to reward the wealthy people and continue harming poor people all over the country.
Michael.
Yes. Well, I have to say that, we still are three separate nations. I know I tried to go to Canada once to shoot a television program, and when I crossed the border, I mean, I was very clearly not in the United States anymore. They did not want me taking a job away from a Canadian, and they interrogated me, essentially. And,
really?
I'm using the word heavily,
right.
But I mean, they wanted to know everything I was doing and why I was doing there, and it was sort of reinforced to me that, you know, we may have a lot in common with Canada and probably with Mexico, but we're still very separate entities.
Louis Cass was an exploring governor of Michigan who led an 1820 expedition. Chrissy is.
Good to know.
All right, there we go. There we go. Thank you, Chrissy. Well, I guess we're almost out of time. I can't take another phone call. A reminder that Michael will be at Boswell Books on Downer in Milwaukee at 7 o'clock tonight, and then tomorrow at Next Chapter Books at 7 o'clock in Mequon, Wisconsin. Do you, in the 30 seconds we have remaining, want to make a proposal for a state, Michael, or should we expand at the moment?
Sure. Why not?
All right. Good.
You know, what the heck? I do think that, Puerto Rico, Washington, D.C., those are actually plausible, possible future states. And the thing that's keeping Puerto Rico from becoming a state might actually be the beauty pageant. They've won Miss Universe three times, and if they become a state, they can't enter.
So, they have three times?
Three times.
I didn't know that.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for the book, for writing it. It's just really interesting, too, in addition to being a lot of fun. It's very interesting. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Yeah, our guest, Michael Trinklein, you spell his last name T-R-I-N-K-L-E-I-N, and the book is Lost States, True Stories of Texlahoma, Transylvania, and Other States That Never Made It. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production. Tomorrow, we are going to be talking about this massive egg recall, the first hour of the program. And then the second hour of the program, Jeffrey Rosen, law professor at George Washington University, who will talk about his article in the recent New Republic on Justice Louis Brandeis. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for calling. We'll be with you tomorrow. Great conversations ahead here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.